Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It's 5 at 5 with Mully and Hall, where we debate the top five sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Hall. 5 at 5 with Mully and Hall starts now.
What did you make of Tiger Woods winning the Masters? What was more difficult for him to overcome, his physical injuries or his psychological damage of his personal scandal? Which will he be most remembered for, and will he beat Jack's record?
Oh, there's a lot there. I would say that Tiger is, Tiger winning the Masters was a great Masters. There were just so many people at the top of the leaderboard, and Tiger was one of five at one point, and then he took it over down the stretch on a Sunday wearing the red shirt. It was a real throwback moment. I don't know if redemption is the correct word. You know, the implication that somehow he has he's done some sin that he had to recover from. I don't think I buy that at all. It's interesting to see Tiger because he takes the hat off and there's the receding hairline, and then you see the age because the body doesn't show it when you watch him. That silhouette of him as a golfer is one of the most memorable images in sports, and he has a very unique look to himself. And then you realize, wow, Tiger is really a lot older than he used to be. I think it was a lot more difficult for him to overcome the physical injuries than anything else. The psychological damage of the personal scandal is probably an interesting storyline, but really it was the four back surgeries, the Achilles, the knee, I think he had a wrist issue. I mean, you could go through a litany of the physical problems that he had to overcome. And anybody who's ever had a back issue of any kind, the idea that that guy went through four surgeries and is still golfing is pretty extraordinary. That's not something that's very easy to overcome. And a couple of years ago, it looked like he'd never golf again. It looked like he was done with the sport because of the physical issue. So I would say that is really what he had to come back from. And I think he'll be most remembered. He was age three when he was on the Mike Douglas show. Okay, that was not the Tonight Show. It was the Mike Douglas show. And he was 3 years old. And that's 40 years ago. And this guy's been in the public eye since he was a teenager. And it's pretty extraordinary the amount of attention that he got. I think he's going to be remembered as a guy that brought a ton of people into golf, as a real pioneer of the game. I think if he's going to beat Jack's record, he's got to win another one this year. I think if he doesn't win another one this year, then I think Jack's record's going to be safe.
Yeah.
Because there's so many good young golfers out there, it's going to be hard for him to dominate. They don't have the fear of him. They like him. They were kind of cheering for him. They thought it was cool. It was like a throwback story for them. It's weird.
This guy they've always seen on YouTube.
Yeah, it was a guy like, hey, I was a kid. I saw him golf.
I don't think he's going to beat the record. I think it's 18. And it's a tall order, but I don't think it diminishes anything from yesterday. Yesterday was one of those moments where you're going to ask yourself, where were you when Tiger Woods won his fifth Masters at the age of 43? It was one of those sports landmarks, I think, mentally. To me, it represents one of the greatest comebacks in all of sports. When you look at what he was able to do and where he came from to do it, it's hard to come up with, you know, a comparison. I think Ben Hogan, you know, coming back from a car accident, that's going to be mentioned. Jack Nicklaus, you know, didn't necessarily come back from anything, but 46
Hogan was,
years old.
They were hit by a bus, right?
Yeah.
A Greyhound bus, and he threw himself to the other side. I mean, that is, I don't know that anything is going to be like that.
That's hard. But I think in today's society, seeing where Tiger Woods came from 4 years ago, 2 years ago, he was coming off his fourth back procedure. Yeah. that's significant.
We know spinal fusion.
Yeah, that's big. We know all about the controversy. We know all about the, you know, the ex-wife and the infidelity. We know all about the how he became the butt of everybody's joke in America. And while kind of growing up in the eye of the media storm, he overcame things that he created, but he also suffered injuries he couldn't avoid. I just feel like yesterday was one of the, it's going to be difficult to top in terms of golf this year. Had a lot of significance for him as far as personally, as we mentioned, more than golf as a sport, because I think that was bigger in 97. But I think overall, we'll remember him for his greatness. And yes, all of the other celebrity things that come with that. But this is a guy who will, you know, his legacy is he's one of the greatest athletes who ever lived.
Yeah, no question about it. And you guys know I'm not a huge golf fan, but I said on Friday, if Tiger is in it, I will be watching it. And I was watching it all weekend, you know, sandwiched between some other things I had going on. Watched a little bit of the baseball as well, but appointment television, to be sure. And I think you're right, David. It's going to be one of those moments where you will always remember where you were when it happened. I mean, we were talking, Dustin and I, before the show, and he said right when he hit that one on 16, you kind of knew that was it from there on, where it just kept rolling and rolling. I thought the damn thing was actually going to go in at one point. So it was amazing. Storybook stuff for sure. I mean, as a guy who kind of came of age, I was around, well, like 11 or 12, 11 when he won the Masters for the first time. And myself, and I'm sure Ray will probably agree, our generation, it's all we knew was Tiger Woods. And he was like the coolest dude on the planet. He made golf cool single-handedly with the hat and the red and the Nike, and he was just he just had swag before swag was like even a thing, which is weird because Tiger Woods is not somebody you would describe as having a lot of quote-unquote swagger, but he really was the man, and nobody could mess with him whatsoever, and he reverted back to that yesterday. It was tremendous. I think the physical injuries that he did come back from was crazy when you look at his back and how screwed up he was there for a while and what came along with that in terms of the chemical dependencies. He'll be most remembered for being the greatest golfer ever, and I don't think he'll be Jack either. He's got a shot at it. I certainly would love to see it, but I think that he will go down as the most dominant, even if he doesn't get that record. And I think some of the drama or the ancillary storylines with you know, the sex addiction and his wife at the golf club, I think that's I don't want to say blown out of proportion, because it's definitely an important part of the story here and you have to focus in on it. But it's not like he was, you know, beating his wife or, you know, having guns around or, you know, assaulting people. Let's try to keep it in a little bit of perspective here. He wasn't a saint by any means, but I think most of what he did was more personal problems and, you know, things where he was kind of hurting himself more than hurting other people, you know, kind of keeping in the family. Not that that makes it great, but it was incredible. I'll always remember for sure.
Yeah, to me, there's nothing better in sports than the redemption story, the comeback story. That is the greatest right there. And that transcends any type of sport. Put it in front of me, show it to me. And this was exactly it. It was a thing of beauty to watch Tiger Woods all weekend. And I, like Kevin, I'm not a big golf guy. But, I mean, this is, growing up, I mean, every generation has their sports idols, their sports icons. And Michael Jordan was that for my generation, basketball. And Tiger Woods was that for golf. Absolutely. And when Tiger went away, so did my interest in golf. And so to see him come back, I mean, it's just amazing. So I just thought it was one of the greatest sports moments I've ever witnessed in my life, hands down. What was more difficult for him to overcome, his physical injuries or the psychological damage? I'd say, of course, the physical injuries. I mean, your back. I mean, that's going to screw you up in any sport if your back isn't right. But for him to put in all the work that he did to come back, that is just, again, amazing, a testament to the type of athlete he is, absolutely. So, I mean, the psychological damage, I mean, that's goes hand in hand as well. But, I mean, if your back isn't right, your back isn't right, you can't compete. So, I guess, yeah, definitely the physical injuries. I think this moment is what he'll be most remembered for yesterday. That comeback is going to be what he's most remembered for, that 11-year gap and thinking a guy is done, even himself a couple years ago admitting that he saying that he thinks he's done with the sport. He doesn't think he can go on any longer. Just to see him come back, that he will be remembered for that. And is he going to beat Jack's record? I agree with the idea that it's a tall order, but I'd like to see him at least win another, maybe go for another, even two.
Well, first, I'd like to thank the fine folks at the Masters for their fantastic app.
Yeah, the question that, it was is, unbelievable.
Where were you?
I was
at Governor State University most of the weekend. So that's where I was when Tiger did this. But thanks to the app, I was able to watch it and listen to it all in real time and actually pick what I wanted to watch and listen to.
Right.
Very, very, very cool app. If you didn't do it this year, highly recommended for next year. Nothing wrong with the TV broadcast. Nothing wrong with the radio broadcast, but just a really cool way to take it in. As far as where him and Jack, Mully, you make a great point. It would just seem logical that if he doesn't win another one this year, and remember, Bethpage Black, he's won there.
Won there.
Okay. Pebble Beach, he's won there. I'm not sure where the British Open is, but he's probably won there. Maybe he hasn't because they probably would have pointed that out. But in all honesty, there's no reason to think that he couldn't win like three out of the next five at Augusta. It just the court, he just knows, and that's why the reason he won yesterday is because he played the court. He was slow and steady. They always say the Masters is won when on the back nine on Sunday. When was this Masters won? On the back nine on Sunday. Okay, these morons. Okay, putting the ball in the water, and then Tiger says, really? You guys are all just going to genuflect to me? Okay, I'll just put the ball a little bit over to the left. I'll aim in between the two bunkers. I'll leave myself 30, 40 feet, and I'll tap in for an easy par. And that's when the whole thing was won. I mean, Molinari is just good. Euro trash, fifth place. Congratulations. Okay, as far as all the off-the-course stuff, I'm sure it was harder to overcome the back. Your back in golf is a huge part of your game. It might be the most important body part in any sport, right? Like that, how important it is to your game. You could argue. He's kind of getting off free on the whole adultery. Isn't adultery one of the big sins? Right,
he's not the only pro athlete to ever cheat on his wife. If it breaks people up that much, they should just stop watching sports, stop watching movies.
I don't
stop doing anything because every famous person cheats on their bloody wife.
I had this conversation.
He didn't
with somebody
cheat
yesterday.
On his wife. He Will Chamberlain on his wife.
Yeah, there's cheating and then there's tigering.
Thought there was sexual liberation in the year 2019. What year is this?
Oh, that's an interesting question.
Oh, I like that.
I like that question because there's not an obvious answer.
Bunch of prudes. Who is heading in the better direction, the 5-9 Cubs or the 5-9 White Sox, and why?
For some reason, it feels like the White Sox are probably more excited coming out of New York, winning 2 out of 3 against the Yankees. And I think it's because of how they did it with Loy hitting 2 home runs on Friday night, Carlos Rodon getting a nice lecture from Don Cooper and responding with a workmanlike effort and beating the Yankees, and Tim Anderson leading the American League in hitting and hitting a grand slam and being Mr. Clutch. So there's a feeling that in the White Sox are 5-9, it feels different because maybe people expected them to be in this position 14 games into the season. Whereas the Cubs, yeah, they had a couple of nice starts back to back. You feel good about where their direction is headed. Then Saturday happens and, you know, they get into the point where that game's going to be remembered for the Kyle Schwarber, you know, Mount Schwarber explodes. It's not Mount Eloy on Friday night. It's Mount Schwarber on Saturday and what happened down the stretch. And, that kind of obscured the fact that Kyle Hendricks still is not great coming out of the gate with the first couple innings and that, oh, by the way, the bullpen that had been scoreless for a week gave up seven walks from the bullpen. That gives you pause for any sort of excitement. Thank goodness yesterday they probably took a day off, and Mother Nature, the assistant pitching coach, gave them a reprieve. And Mike Trout, the amateur meteorologist, knew better than to come to Chicago because he saw this coming. The Cubs go to Miami feeling like they need to get things going. The White Sox return home with a little momentum. So right now, 5-9 feels better on the south side.
It's weird. The Sox are better on the road than at home, huh? What's that about? It's strange. You'd like to see them take advantage of being at home, and perhaps they can do so.
Because I've been going to too many games.
Bad opponent. Isn't there a Wednesday game, Kevin, that we can go to? There's like
Dollar
Wednesday
hot dogs. You want to do that?
It's an afternoon game, right?
I believe so. Let me double check here.
Yeah, we ought to look into that. That would be a fun thing to.
1 o'clock.
Yeah, we'll get the whole crew to go. Ray, you in for it? He's always in for anything. Maybe not Dustin. He's probably got other things to do.
Be governor state.
And by the way, the British Open is at Royal Portrush, which is in Northern Ireland, and it is only the second time the Open Championship has been on the course. The last 30 years before Tiger was born, so I don't think he's won there. But maybe nobody has. Who knows? Probably a home game for Rory, right? Isn't that what we'll hear? At any rate, I would say that the White Sox do appear to be headed in the right direction more so than the Cubs, because the Cubs are supposed to be a winning team. And the White Sox are right where they're supposed to be, and they've won a series, and they've got some young guys playing well. Moncada's playing well. Aloy, the power started, thankfully. Of course, Tim Anderson is killing the ball. He's just playing great. So you have Rodon pitching better than he did. Nice to see him get another good outing. So it's a question of expectation. The Sox about where we thought they'd be, and the Cubs well below where we imagined they would be at this point. The Cubs, though, do seem like they may have turned a corner a little bit. I think the pitching's been a lot better, and they've had a couple of good outings, and hopefully Lester gets back, and you've got Cole Hamels pitching well, and you got Quintana pitching well, so that's a good sign.
Well, they're both set up, both the Cubs and White Sox set up pretty well for the next few games. Of course, the Cubs taking on the lowly Marlins. If you don't take two out of three there, then that's going to be an issue. And the Sox back at home with Kansas City, who are equally as bad as the Marlins. So the immediate two series for these teams, respectively, seem pretty good. Then you look at the pitching matchups for tonight, and maybe you don't get as optimistic with the Yu Darvish start for the Cubs and Irvin Santana pitching for the White Sox. The good news for Santana is he can't possibly be any worse than he was the first time out. There's nowhere to go but up for him. You know, the thing with the White Sox that's kind of stopping me from getting too optimistic about anything, and they do have some guys capable of hitting the ball. They can score some runs when they get hot, but you can really only rely on two-fifths of that rotation from where I'm sitting right now. And unless you've got Rodon and Nova going in a series, it's kind of a crapshoot. Giolito was pretty bad again on Friday. Lopez has been horrible so far. So, you know, it's hard for me to really get too excited long-term about either one of these clubs right now, but I would say that it would be the Cubs barely, because they do have the Marlins and they're barely a major league team.
I am going to say at this moment, the White Sox are looking like they're heading in a better direction in this very moment, just because, you know, the bullpen, the Cubs bullpen is what kills me the most. That you've had let's take Saturday, for instance. I mean, too many walks, just too many damn walks. I mean, this is the Cubs World Series window. You expect them to be competitive. You bet that you expect them to make it deeper into the postseason. That's the expectation for the Cubs World Series or bust. So in the larger scope, you expect the Cubs to overall head in the better direction. This is a rebuilding year for the White Sox, but you have to be excited about what you are seeing from this White Sox team. When you look at the struggles of Yoan Moncada, who's a big part of the future of the White Sox, I mean, the arrow's pointing way up for him. Mount Eloy finally erupted. He finally got the first home run there. So
Mount Eloy erupts for the first time.
There it is. A lot more of those to come. Two home runs in that game. I mean, you can't help but be anything but optimistic about the White Sox offense. I mean, and Tim Anderson, too. So after this particular weekend, I'm going to say it's the White Sox who are trending in the better direction. But, you know, the Cubs got to get it together with that bullpen, man. And I think the weather, thank goodness, saved us from a Tyler Chatwood start yesterday. We got to hope for a good start today from Yu Darvish that goes well past the fifth inning. We need a quality outing from you.
This is a funny question. So who's heading in the better direction as both teams sit at 5-9? Remember, at least in my opinion, the White Sox wins and losses don't matter this year at all. But two of the things that mattered happened over the weekend. It's fantastic. I actually saw the first of the two home runs on Friday night. I thought that was great. And then to see Carlos Rodon, who has just been an absolute roller coaster, right? And we David mentioned it about Coop coming out, talking to him, and how he responded to that. That was that you're a White Sox, that's great to see. So those that core, the core of the White Sox is heading in a much better direction. I mean, Chris Bryant got benched, basically. Was it maintenance? He got benched. Okay, and then they don't even think enough of him. And I always complain about this. But if you're Chris Bryant, when you're one of the supposed $300 million plus players out there, those are guys that should get their rear ends off of benches in the moment where you saw Contreras and Schwarber strike out to end a game. Right? I mean, wouldn't you have liked to have seen Chris Bryant? I know if he would have struck out, we would have killed Joe Maddon for doing it, right? I'd have been first in line to do it. But also, when he's sitting on the bench, I'm going to kill Joe Maddon.
Load management.
Load management already.
The Otto Porter treatment.
Right. It's funny to Ray, you know, they get to skip Tyler Chatwalk, so we don't have to live through that. I mean, maybe that's good for the Cubs, but it's bad for us, something for us to talk about. And so it's a huge outing for you, Darvish. But a day off helps the bullpen. Can't hurt the bullpen. Can only help the bullpen. Maybe Chris Bryant, if he is load maintenance, he gets an extra day off and a little sunshine on the face and everything. They can say hello to the sun again like they had in Arizona. So I guess the Sox core is heading in a better direction than the Cubs core right now. Let's put it that way.
I don't quite get the question.
Chris Bryant, Anthony Rizzo, and Kyle Schwarber have combined for one home run per 30.2 plate appearances over the first 14 games. Which of the three stars hitting for power first, or which will start hitting for power first, and which will end up with the best season?
Boy, you know, it's really impossible to say Chris Bryant in that to answer that question. It's just impossible because he seems farthest away. Schwarber will end up being Schwarber. I think Rizzo ends up having the best season, and I think Schwarber ends up hitting home runs first.
Yeah, I don't see it that way. I think Schwarber, I wanted to believe in him early on. You saw the nice crouch, you saw the adjustments, and you saw Kyle Schwarber. Everyone talked about him looking like the guy that came up, and then I don't know what's happened in the last week or so, but he does not look like the same guy. I could see him regressing. The Anthony Rizzo and Chris Bryant starts have been disappointing as well. But I think overall, my guess is as which of the three starts hitting for power first and which winds up with the best season. Rizzo will probably get going first. It'll take Chris Bryant a little bit longer. But to me, he's more prone to get home runs and binges, and he can carry a team for stretches once he gets hot. I'm not going to give up on Chris Bryant after 14 games. I just think he's too good. We've seen him, and if he is indeed as healthy as everybody's saying, he's proven too much in a short period of time. I think he gets the benefit of the doubt. I think he ends up having the best overall season. Rizzo probably hits for power first, and I'm not sure where Schwarber is right now.
You know, it's kind of tough because, you know, you look at the resumes of these guys, and it's just astounding to think that the power hasn't been there. Now, Rizzo is a guy who's gotten off to slow starts before. We've seen a lot of inconsistency from Schwarber in his career, and Bryant still clearly not back from the shoulder injury. So you could make a case that all three of these guys will bounce back at some point. I don't know why.
Why is he laughing
appropriately?
No, it's very funny because we brought it. Hold on. You guys, this it's funny that he mentions that about Bryant's shoulder. Now, you guys brought this up to Ozzie, okay?
Ozzie's
opinion, yeah. Clearly something was wrong. In his opinion, Bryant's just not healed. Then the afternoon show brought this up to Theo. And Theo said, oh, no. He is absolutely fine. There's nothing wrong with. So it's just interesting. Like, both guys went all in on both opposite sides of it. And based on the benching, I do think something's up with the shoulder. I think there's something.
You keep
there
saying it's a benching. I think that implies that he was benched because he was hitting.
Is he hitting, David?
He's not hitting,
okay.
But I think
neither Schwarber.
The day off was part of the plan that they announced. This is the new way they're going to do things. They determine who is going to day off before the series.
You're telling me that a week ago that they penciled in Mike Trout coming to town, Cubs Angels first weekend series. We're going to give Chris Bryant a day off.
Well, I don't know if it was a week ago, but probably Thursday or whenever they decided.
That sounds like a benching to me.
Okay.
Well, Chris Bryant's the best player out of this bunch. I think he'll still end up with the having the best season overall if he does stay healthy. And it tickles me to no end to see all of these Johnny come lately, petty, short memory, haven't asked Cub fans that all of a sudden want to kick this guy out of town because he got injured and he's off to a bad start.
We'll he's take a bust, him. Kevin. Yeah, I don't know if you read that. He's a bust.
Trade him, this, that. He stinks. He's this. Take him on the south side, all right? If you don't appreciate the greatness of Chris Bryant, you petty, short memory having Cub fans, send him down on the red line. Get off at 35th.
I think it's I cannot imagine another season that Chris Bryant is not effective. Another down year, although albeit he ended the season injured last year. I have to think that overall Chris Bryant is going to have an offensive resurgence somewhere down the line. He's going to come alive and end up having the best season overall. You have to believe that because Chris Bryant is your best player on this Cubs team. So absolutely, I think overall Chris Bryant will make a resurgence. He'll come back and have a great year offensively. He's just having a very, very, very unfortunately slow start. In terms of who is going to hit for power first, I think Rizzo. I think it'll be Rizzo. Maybe this bomb he hit on Friday, this big home run he hit, is the first of many to come. I'm going to say Rizzo gets going first, and then Chris Bryant will overall have the better season.
Well, it's got to be. It better be Bryant, right? I mean, he needs this right now. I'm not ready to trade him or anything like that. I just can't believe that. I was shocked by Saturday. That just seems so not Joe Madden-ish. And if the guy's healthy, he should be in there. The Cubs aren't in a position. If the record was opposite, okay, if the Cubs were 9-5, and they wouldn't have been at that point, but let's say they were 8-3, okay, fine, give the guy a day off, okay? But they're not in a position to give guys days off unless there's an injury or unless you're benching the guy. So one of the two or a combination there has to be it. But I expect him to rebound. I'm happy he's a Cub. I would love him to be a Cub in the future. I'm just not so sure I'd want the Cubs paying him $300 or $350 million moving forward. Rizzo seems like the guy that's going to get the power going. I think he's hit some big home runs down in Miami in the past. You hope, though, right now, based on what happened most recently with the Cubs, that it's Schwarber. Like, Schwarber needs a feel-good. I hope that Joe doesn't
I like that he's angry. I think that'll help him.
I hope so.
He was terrifying. I was scared for the umpire. I was scared for Javi.
I love what you said, though, David, right? Like, what would have happened? Like, if he had gotten past Javi Baez, David, like, what would he have done? That's the wild part. Like,
disemboweled the umpire.
You really have to use your... Like, would he have... And I
tackled
hope he would know because he'd have been suspended for quite a long time.
Yeah.
Right? But wow, that was...
Tackle an umpire, you're going to lose some salary.
That was scary. Kevin's right, it was scary.
He did go, though. I mean, let's be honest here. The barrel of the bat crossed the plate, he went.
His wrist went for sure.
It's a great question.
Tim Anderson leads baseball with a 429 average. Where does he have to finish in that category to have a successful year?
Wait, I thought batting average doesn't matter anymore. Is that one of those metrics that doesn't apply?
Well, Kevin obviously didn't put this question
I'll wait
in.
My turn.
No, it always does. It always matters. If you're hitting 429, it matters. If you're hitting over 300, I think that if you're Tim Anderson, you've got to like that. Tim Anderson is an offensive threat. I hope he stays consistent. He's not going to hit 400, but he's going to hit at a high enough level where he makes an impact. I like him at the top of the order. I like what he brings, his confidence. He's got a little swag. I'm concerned with him only from a defensive standpoint. That's his concentration level sometimes lapses. He can make the great play, but make the routine ones. He doesn't have to finish at a certain point average-wise. If he's above 300, to me, that's a successful offensive season. He's going to hit for some power at some point. I like Tim Anderson as a player. I like him being more vocal. I like everything that he has to offer the White Sox in terms of a player, a leader. He's emerging as that, and also he's one of these guys that has a little charisma. So everything that Tim Anderson is doing so far this year, it's easy to like.
Yeah, he's been in the league for, this is what, his fourth year? So it's a small sample size, but if he can, pretty much top his career numbers, I think that would be unbelievable, right? I mean, what was his WAR last year? It wasn't very good, so... It'd be great if the guy has a good batting average. I know it doesn't matter, but it would certainly mean that his WAR has gone up significantly. And I would like to see him, if he could, he's at whatever. Is he at 429? I thought he was at 444. He batted in a handful of games. Yeah, if he can get to like 285, I think that would be a career high, and that would be a really admirable way of improving from last year to this year. He batted 240 last year.
He's got a real shot at hitting 300, though, if he continues to be as aggressive as he is at the plate.
We're thinking about him differently.
Yeah.
I think in terms of batting average, generally, yes, I would agree that, you know, on-base percentage, OPS are much more important stats. But a guy like Tim Anderson's never going to walk a ton. He's never going to be a guy who is the most patient at the plate. Maybe he doesn't need to be. Some guys, you know, benefit from a more aggressive approach. Look at Moncada and his improvement this year as well, where he's been more aggressive. And I think that, Mully, to your point about his wins above replacement last year, he was a 2.0, which is about an average league player. You know, you're worth about two wins, give or take. And I think he should be better than that this year. I think defensively in the second half last year, he really made strides. He made a great play this weekend on a liner going away from him, and he snagged it down. I think, yeah, if he sets a career high in batting average, if he's around 285, 290, that would be good. But more importantly than that, I want to see the power numbers continue to go up. I want to see a lot of home runs. I want to see a lot of doubles. I want to see him driving in runs. I want to see him playing great defense at shortstop. I think he's capable of all that.
Yeah, this is a pretty simple answer. I mean, I think even 300 is not that short of an expectation based on what you've seen from him, albeit the small sample size. But that would be the career high. I mean, even in 2016, when he only played 99 games, his average was around 283 or something around there is where he finished out the season. So, and that's without even a full season. So definitely you want to see a career high. So yeah, definitely 300 would be ideal. And you want to see him be consistent with what he's contributing to this White Sox offense. Absolutely. He has the talent to be one of the main guys here we see batting in runs all season long.
You know, of course it matters. The idea that this doesn't matter. Dave and I were talking about this a day or two, maybe it was last week. Has anybody bought in baseball cards in a while?
No.
Seriously.
Bought.
Huh?
Bought.
No, I have not.
Bought's not a word.
Okay.
Sorry.
I'm definitely not giving the rest of my answer now.
Okay, well, we'll go without it if you don't say bought again.
Don't ask me about that.
This segment brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. Nothing beats playoff hockey in Chicago, and you won't want to miss a single second at Allstate Arena as the first place Chicago Wolves look to defend their home ice advantage. For latest playoff information or tickets, visit ChicagoWolves.com. Steph Curry moved past Ray Allen as the NBA's all-time leading playoff three-point shooter. He needed 80 fewer games. How will Curry be remembered?
Curry is one of the... He's going to be a Hall of Famer, okay? He's barely into his career, and he's going to be a Hall of Famer. I mean, how long did Ray Allen last?
He's been there 10 years.
But how long did Ray Allen
long time.
I mean, I'm just saying, playing 19. Forever. Curry is really, he's a sensational talent, and I think he's changed the game of basketball. I think that he'll be remembered as a guy that really altered the game. The game is played differently since he came into the league than it was before he was in the league. He is the guy. He is the poster child for the three-point shot. He is the guy that brought the little man back into the game. He is a guy without imposing size that dominates a sport that used to be the big man game. And there's still a place for the big man in the game as long as he can knock down the three. So I'd say Steph Curry is a generational, radically altering of the league type of player, which makes him not just a Hall of Famer, but one of the handful of players that have changed the game of basketball.
Without a doubt. And I like what Doc Rivers had to say the other day when he was talking about the series and Steph Curry, how underrated he is. And when you think about generational players in the NBA, your mind goes first to LeBron, and we talk about Durant, and there are other guys that come to mind. But I tell you, Steph Curry, what he has done, it's been 10 years, and it doesn't seem like it, but it has been 10 years in the league. And now he's making all sorts of history. He has changed the game. The Warriors have helped do that as well. The three-point shot has revolutionized the NBA. And Steph Curry has made the game more accessible for the little guy. And the little guy, everybody is Steph Curry in their driveway. Every kid who's 7, 8 years old is trying to hit the three like he is. And he is just uncanny. It was odd and interesting at the same time seeing this 60 Minutes treatment of the Golden State Warriors last night and seeing Steph Curry there and just so casual and so composed. And this is a guy who is a superstar, but as relatable as any superstar I think you can in any sport. He's definitely a Hall of Famer and one of the best of his generation.
Well, Hall of Famer, no question about it. It's just a matter to me of where he ends up. You know, is he top 10? Is he top 15? Is he top 20? I think that's where the real discussion is. I don't think you could put him any further down than 20. I mean, he's, for me, definitely one of the 20 best players to ever play in the NBA. When you look at his resume, you know, 3 NBA championships, maybe another one this year, 2-time MVP, 6-time All-Star, the greatest shooter of all time. And for as great as Durant is, he's also going to be in the conversation when he's done. You know, sometimes people forget they won without Durant. They did it when it was just Steph and Clay and Harrison Barnes and Draymond. So for me,
Clay is the most underrated player of the whole group.
Oh, no question about it. I mean, especially what he does defensively. That's the one thing about Steph is that he's a little one-dimensional. It just helps that his one dimension is maybe better than anybody else, which is shoot and kind of with his handle as well, getting to the cup. He's pretty good at that. So for me, he's top 20. When it's all said and done, depending on how many titles he wins, he could definitely get it inside the top 15.
Greatest shooter of all time is how Steph Curry will be remembered. Absolutely. He's made that mark. There's been no decline in his game. He just keeps he continues to be consistent. He continues to get better. The scary thing we heard recently was that he got a new contact lens and now he can see even better than he has in the past. So you got to expect that it's just going to get better for Steph Curry. But absolutely, that's how he'll be remembered. Greatest shooter of all time.
Can Chris Bryant borrow that contact lens?
I hope so.
People are saying he's blinking a lot.
Yeah.
He's changed his like sunglasses and different visors. It's like those infomercials you see, like tack glasses at night, and then the special forces wear these mirrored glasses. And he absolutely has changed a generation of kids, right? Everybody's shooting three-pointers now. That's the in thing to do. It used to be about dunking a basketball. Now it's about shooting, and I credit Steph Curry for doing that. He's going to be remembered as one of, if not the best, pure shooters ever to play the game.
He's also like a scratch golfer. Did you know that? Like, he's a really good golfer, which isn't a surprise to learn.
A lot of those guys are good at many different sports you wouldn't imagine. I did not know he was a scratch golfer. Not surprised.
312-644-6767. That's the 5 at 5. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to the score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.